What's up, everybody? Before we launch into today's episode, we have a very exciting announcement. We here at the Command Zone are hiring.
That's right. If you've ever dreamed of turning your love of Magic the Gathering and Commander into a career, if you want to work with creative professionals in a fast-paced environment that's really rewarding, if you're creative, ambitious, hardworking, passionate, we want you on our team. And one thing, Jimmy, is that's really cool, I think, is we have a lot of positions open, and it's all the way from people who are entry level with no experience to people with that are experts in their field that have a lot of experience. We want people all along that spectrum. I think this is a really cool place to work. Hopefully you would agree.
Yeah, I think so. It's been one of the best parts of my life for the last 7 years. And if you're looking for a way to get into showbiz, the entertainment industry, online content creation, there is no better place. We very much look forward to seeing everyone's applications.
Yeah. So that link is collected.company/jobs. The link will be in the show notes, so you don't have to memorize it or anything. Mm-hmm. But please, if you're interested, if you want to join our team, follow that link, apply for one of the positions or multiple positions, and hopefully we're
see
talking to you very soon. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everyone. All right. Let's get on with the episode.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
What's up, everybody? You are watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I am one of your hosts on this fine day, and my name is Jimmy Wong.
And I'm your other host. My name is DJ.
And we are reviewing AFR, Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. Oh boy, set reviews are back, and there's plenty of interesting cards to talk about. Thankfully, we have already covered red and blue, and today we are covering black and white. Very interesting. So before we get into it, Dungeons & Dragons is a great set, and you're probably going to want to get a part of this into your playset as well, or your deck. So head on over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That's the number one place to go if you are looking to purchase anything in AFR, AFC, the Commander decks. Maybe you missed something from Modern Horizons. Who knows? There's lots of awesome cards to put into your decks. I know I need a couple more Esper Sentinels. That's the thing I'll be on the hunt out for. And of course, another way to support the show is by purchasing Ultra Pro products. Ultra Pro is one of our great sponsors of the show, and they make all of the playmats and the deck boxes and the sleeves, everything that we use to adorn our decks and keep them nice, safe, and sound. And actually, right now, we have a Kickstarter going on for our very own Game Night deck box made by Ultra Pro. This is an extremely high-quality product, and we have a very limited supply. So if you haven't pledged already, well, I'm hoping that it's still there and it hasn't been sold out yet. So pause this video, click on the link in the show notes below. You'll be able to get straight to that, and you'll be able to see and bid and get right into the action and get your secure your pledge today for the Game Night deck box. You don't want to miss out. It's definitely an awesome piece of equipment, and you can carry 2 100 double sleeved decks in there. DJ and I are both double sleeved fanatics, so we know how important that is.
Every single deck is double sleeved.
Actually, you know what? I actually have one, and I'm disgusted with myself. I need to fix that ASAP. But before I do, I will also let you know that patreon.com/commandzone is the last and final way to support the show directly. We love our patrons, and we shout out one lucky patron every single episode. And this episode is dedicated to Steve Boutiger.
Steve. You rock.
You do rock, indeed. All right, let's get right into it. White, black cards in Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. I'm really hoping to see some standouts here from white. We know they need the help. So let's kick it off with
the Book of Exalted Deeds. White, for a legendary artifact. At the beginning of your end step, if you gained 3 or more life this turn, create a 3/3 white angel creature token with flying.
Nice.
Then you can pay white, tap, exile the Book of Exalted Deeds, put an enlightened counter on target angel. It gains, you can't lose the game, and your opponents can't win the game. Activate only as a sorcery. Platinum Angel,
right. Very interesting. So for white, you get an artifact. You can probably gain 3 life pretty easily in any angel deck. There's lots of life gain decks running around now.
Easily gain 3 life. I think that if your deck is humming like it's supposed to, you are creating a 3/3 angel every single turn.
Every single turn.
And for white, that's amazing.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, Aristocrats decks as well, you know, just sacking 3 creatures, draining 3 from everyone, that's going to gain you that 3 life, and you're going to make that 3/3 angel. And then for another 3 mana, get rid of this thing on your turn, of course, but then you get to get your own Platinum Angel.
Woo!
Wow.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah, not to mention Platinum Angel is a more expensive card.
It's seven mana for just the Platinum Angel.
So in this case, you get to have a three mana card that occasionally, maybe every single turn, pumps out three threes. If you get this out as early as turn three, you could be having, you know, five or six angels out of this by the end of the game. And then when things get dicey, because everyone's going to look at you and want to murder you for all your angels, blam, you get to make one of them a Platinum Angel.
I think that one of the coolest things to make a Platinum Angel is something like a Mutavault.
Oh.
Because your Mutavault is a land and you can activate it and it can become, it's every creature type.
It's a shapeshifter changeling, right? Yeah,
Angel. And so you can make that Mutavault into that Platinum Angel and then it goes back into being a land.
Oh, and then that card, it still has the text on it. You can't lose the game and your opponents can't win the game.
Which makes it super difficult for people to interact with.
Yeah, that's lovely. I would try and put this on an Avacyn because that thing is indestructible and so is everything else. So at that point, or maybe another Angel at that point if Avacyn is out, because Avacyn is usually a lightning rod for removal, but that seems pretty awesome. I do like this card quite a bit, and I like where the power level is. It fits directly into those Angel life gain decks, but it isn't so busted that it's a must include in every single deck, but it definitely adds power to white in general.
Yeah, it seems like it goes in very specific decks. It's powerful in a narrow way, you know, and I'm a big fan of that.
Big fan of that as well. All right. Next up, we do have an equipment. It is the Dancing Sword. And if you look at the art, it has danced its way right through a goblin's arm. One in a white for an artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +2/+1, and the equip cost is 1. However, this has really interesting text on it. When equipped creature dies, you may have Dancing Sword become a 2/1 construct artifact creature with flying and ward 1. If you do, it isn't an equipment. So ward 1 just means that if it becomes the target of something, they have to pay an extra 1 mana on top to target it. So this is great.
Wait,
this
what's its equip cost?
1.
Wow, this is super efficient. You know, Bone Splitter or other cards out there that are very efficient power pumping cards, you know, this is 2 mana to put down and 1 to equip. That is a great power boost to a lot of creatures.
+2/+1, it gives toughness as well. That's pretty cool.
I think that this is awesome. I think that this is a really efficient way to get power onto a creature fast.
Yeah, and then when that creature dies, it can become a creature itself, which does seem like one of the big downfalls of a lot of the equipment decks is that you load all your stuff onto a creature, it dies, and then blame you don't have a creature to equip your stuff onto. But the Dancing Sword can become another creature that you equip more things onto. So it's dancing as a sword and has other swords on it.
I think that it is phenomenal because, like you said, sometimes your creature dies and you might have another creature to attach everything onto, but you don't want to take a turn off getting another creature on the battlefield, equipping everything else on. Mm-hmm. So this just automatically becomes your creature. It's exactly what you want in equipment decks too. Evasive.
Yeah.
It's got flying. It's hard to kill. Well, harder to kill with ward 1. It's just a little bit, it's a little bit annoying. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I love the idea of a flying sword, through the air. I think this is fantastic in most equipment decks, which is, again, it's narrow, but it's very good, which is exactly where the power level, I think, should be. And I think Akiri Fearless Voyager might be the best fit for this card.
Perfect, perfect. All right, next up, we've got Flumph.
Flumph.
It's 1 and a white for a 0/4 jellyfish. It's got Defender and Flying. Whatever Flumph is dealt damage, you and target opponent each draw a card.
Is Flumph farting in this picture? What is happening?
It has to be.
It's like,
wait, why would it be farting? Both of you draw a card on flavor wise, you know?
Maybe it's like a pleasant smelling fart.
It's a pleasant one.
But it's enough for Flumph to evade the damage enough because he's clear, or it, whatever it is evading
jellyfish.
The damage. Jellyfish.
Jellyfish, yeah, of course.
The fish is evading it. So Defender Tribal, right? 1 mana, 0/4 flyer Defender. Interestingly, it is kind of a group hug card because you want your opponent to swing a 2/2 into it, right?
I think that it's nice because you get to choose how to do that. So if you swing a 2/2 at me, I'll just be like, no, thank you. But but sometimes we might make a deal. I'm like, Jimmy, swing your 1/1 at me. And then we both draw a card.
Yeah.
I actually think that that's good white card draw to politically change things up and give certain people cards and deny other people cards.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think putting this in Arcades the Strategist is good.
Perfect.
But at that point, it becomes a 4 power creature, basically.
4/4 flyer.
Yeah, so that's nice, too. And then if you do get trades with it, then you both draw a card, so that's not the worst in the world. Around the table's turn, you could be drawing 3 cards if 3 different people swing into it.
I mean, that's a really good mark. Because if you think about it this way, some people just really hate the symmetrical effect of you draw a card and I draw a card.
Right.
But let's just say you say to everyone, everyone gets to draw a card. Okay, you draw a card, Josh draws a card, and Ashlyn draws a card. I've drawn three cards. It is not symmetrical in that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you can politically choose who's drawing cards or just get reliable card draw from everyone, like, this turns out to be great.
And honestly, if you were the mono white player that came at me and went, hey, look, just if you want to do something this turn, I can guarantee you that you draw an extra card, just swing it into my flump. I'd be like, yeah, sure, why not? I'll give you an extra card because I'm getting a card. But yeah, if you do it for three people, that's three cards for you and one for each of them. That's really nice. I like that a lot. Hopefully we see more of that around the table. Okay, next up we have the Planeswalker in white. It is the Grand Master of Flowers. Two white, white for a Bahamut, three loyalty Planeswalker. Haven't seen that word around since Final Fantasy, I feel like.
Oh.
As long as Grandmaster of Flowers has seven or more loyalty counters on him, he's a 7/7 dragon god creature with flying and indestructible. Ah, okay.
Nice.
He has two plus ones. The first plus one says target creature without first strike, double strike, or vigilance can't attack or block until your next turn. And the other plus one is search your library and or graveyard for a card called Monk of the Open Hand. Reveal it and put it into your hand. If you search your library this way, shuffle.
Oh my gosh, what could Monk of the Open Hand be?
Must be so powerful. It must be so cool. It's a one mana 1/1 that gets plus one counters when you cast more than one spell a turn, right?
So not great. Okay, so yeah. we're not really defending it with the Monk of the Open Hand, but we can lock down a single creature. So getting this up to a 7/7 dragon is...
unlikely.
Yeah, so if it's unlikely, and that's clearly the best use for this card, how good is it?
I think this card's actually pretty bad.
I think it's bad too.
Because the second ability, if Monk of the Open Hand was a really cool card, then great. Thumbs up. However, the other ability is just locking down one creature. It doesn't even give you a creature to block with. And even if you were able to double the counters on this with your doubling season, it doesn't even get to seven loyalty counters. It gets to six, and then you have to plus one to get to that seven. So it's going to take a lot of time for people to, I don't know, like, it just doesn't seem like what you want to be doing here in general. There are a lot of Planeswalkers in white. Grandmaster of Flowers, I don't think really makes the cut, but the flavor is pretty awesome and the art's pretty cool too.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the aspects of it are really great, but it's not going to end up performing exactly the way that we want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because multiplayer, you know what I mean? I can see in 1v1, like, oh, like I lock down the one creature you have to attack me. Oh, I lock that one down. Ooh, I go get a monk, you know?
Yeah.
Put it on the battlefield, deploy something else. Like I can see the tempo working in that area, but with more than one player, like no one's going to let that thing stick around to become a 7/7 indestructible god.
And it's so easy to keep it off of that by just pinging it, hitting it for one small amount, right? And then you're just set so far back if you're trying to go for that.
Absolutely. Okay, next up we have Guardian of Faith. It's one white white for a 3/2 Spirit Knight. It has flash and vigilance, and when Guardian of Faith enters the battlefield, any number of other target creatures you control phase out.
Ooh, so you treat them and anything attached to them as though they don't exist until their controller's next turn.
3 mana, creature-based board protection.
It's Teferi's protection, but on a creature.
Amazing.
It only cares about creatures.
Amazing.
This is the stuff that white is clearly moving into. We had Out of Time, right? Which was the enchantment that like got rid of a lot of stuff on the board. We've had Teferi's protection, and now Guardian of Faith is adding itself to the list. I believe this is a area of the color pie that Magic is clearly exploring with white, which is phasing stuff out, taking it off the battlefield temporarily. It's kind of a downside, right? Because if you had activated abilities and stuff, you can't use it. But it's also protection. And it's not... and it's a space that I think white fits really well into, which is just like, we're going to protect ourselves. We're going to hold back, and we're not going to get affected by this board wipe or Psych Rift or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think that Cyclonic Rift is the main thing. Because phasing out, like you said, does have some downsides. Because you phase out through everyone's turn. So it's not just like you might board wipe, you know, or Cyclonic Rift or something like that, but someone else might be able to impact the board.
And Teferi's protection phases you, the player, out. But if you just have Guardian of Faith out, then people can still attack you.
But I think that white needs this because white automatically is going to commit a lot of stuff to the board. Like you just have to play creatures and creature-based decks. You have to have a critical mass of stuff for white to work. And so you need to be able to find ways to protect it. And a lot of times these were 3 mana spells that just gave things indestructible or blinked them out for a little bit or something like that.
Or brought them back to the from the graveyard to the
left. And there were a lot of different, and number one, it went away from the creature-based strategy, but also there are a lot of things that got around it, like Cyclonic Rift, like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
This answers the rifts out there, and it's a creature so that you have more things that synergize it in your deck. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, it's great. It's a spirit knight, so work in those knight decks as well. I know that those have been on the up and up, but Guardian of Faith looks to be a pretty staple-ish card, it would appear. All right, next up is Ingenious Smith. It's a 1/1 creature human artificer. When Ingenious Smith enters the battlefield, look at the top four cards of your library. You may reveal an artifact card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. Whenever one or more artifacts enter the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on Ingenious Smith. This ability triggers only once each turn.
So this is a humble little card. It kind of makes me think of Glintness Crane in blue.
Card.
But this is in white. And so when you have some card draw that works in white, I think you do need to pay a little bit of closer attention to it. Also, there are white decks out there that, you know, look for artifacts and synergize with artifacts. And so I think that this could be something for some of those players out
there. Yeah, I think this is actually a nice, really nice card, again, for a more niche strategy, either equipment decks or sort of like your Ozgear the Reconstructor decks.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. You can Flicker the Body as well. Ephemerate is an amazing card in white. So you're going to get that ability more than once to draw stuff off of it or protect it. And then equipment decks like Dapala or Wyleth or Akiri all want this sort of effect. So I like it a lot. It's also a pretty cheap body that gets bigger, can hold equipment. So this is an all-around just nice card for those types of decks.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to get you... It's going to replace itself. It's going to get you the artifact that you want. Mm-hmm. And then actually over a series of turns, it's going to get pretty big.
Yeah.
And it's going to start becoming a threat. And people are going to be like, oh man, this one thing that already bought itself, it already replaced itself, you can play early on, is now worth a little bit more.
I can dig it.
All right, next up we got Loyal Warhound, 1/1 for a 3/1 dog.
Look how big this dog is.
Everyone. Or is the person small?
Both.
But it's a great dog.
It says
though,
a paladin steed is a celestial spirit in an animal form. I mean, look at this dog. It's huge.
Love that dog. Okay. This good boy has vigilance. And when Loyal Warhound enters the battlefield, if an opponent controls more lands than you, search your library for a basic planes card, put it onto the battlefield, tap, then shuffle.
Whoa. Yes.
2-mana conditional ramp in white on a body.
It's a staple.
It's a staple.
It's just straight up a staple. Knight of the White Orchid, we read online, 18,000 decks, so 7% of the decks out there that were cataloged. That is a staple in and of itself. This will also be a staple, I believe, especially because it's a dog. It's a relevant creature type, too.
And it's a little bit easier to cast 1/1.
Yeah, instead of white-white, I mean? Totally, yeah.
So yeah, it's going to be great.
If you have Rinnan Sari as your commander, you already have green, but look, now you have another dog that synergizes and gets you mana onto the battlefield. Basic planes only, but look, I can't complain when white gets stuff like this. We need more of it, and now that there's just another version of it, great. Awesome. Perfect. And it doesn't hurt any formats, I don't think. It doesn't hurt Commander, it doesn't damage it. This is exactly where I want white to be looking at. So right now, I'm very happy with the white cards.
So happy so far. Yeah. I'm feeling great.
All right, next up we have Paladin Class. So this is a series of cards. Every single color has one, as well as there's a multicolored set. These are kind of like sagas or level up cards in that you have multiple levels, and it's an enchantment with a new type called Class. So when you play this, you play it for 1 white mana, and the first effect on this enchantment that goes into effect immediately is spells your opponents cast during your turn cost 1 more to cast. So it's a slight tax on everything that they're doing when it's your turn. Now, you can pay 2 and a white to level it to level 2, and when you pay 2 and a white, you get creatures you control get +1/+1. Keep in mind that you can only level up at sorcery speed. And then 4 and a white, you get to level 3, and it says whenever you attack until end of turn, target attacking creature gets +1/+1 for each other attacking creature and gains double strike.
Ooh. That's a big effect at the end right there.
So 1 man to get a card that makes your opponents slightly slower during your turn doesn't seem to be too effective because they can just cast up during another turn. 4 mana, 1 and 2 and a white, to give you an entire anthem to your team for +1/+1, and then 1+3+5. 9 mana to get this final ability. Whenever you attack until end of turn, target attacking creature gets +1/+1 for each other attacking creature. So you want to go wide, and then that creature gains double strike.
All right. So I think that sometimes when we're looking at these classes, we look at one of the levels and we're like, ooh, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we look at this last level and we say, we want that.
That's definitely the best. I definitely would want that more than the other two. Even.
But the thing is that you have to get there. And if you're looking for a big, powerful, splashy effect, it's not worth 9 mana. So you have to want the levels before it as well. Do you know what I mean?
And you have to be able to position yourself so that you pay for level two at a certain point. And then when you get to level three, you're able to do that on top of whatever else you need to do so that you're not just dumping mana into this and nothing is affected on the board. So you got to build out your board and strategically sort of level this up at the right point because it's not all at once, right?
Yeah, and sorcery speed means that you have to plan it out, like you're saying.
Yeah.
The first thing, spells, your opponents can have to pay one more. I think that if an opponent really wants to interact with you, they'll do it at instant speed, or they'll pay the mana around it, or something like that. It's not like it prevents you from being counterspelled or something like that. So that's a pretty minimal effect that works a lot better in one-on-one when, you know, you're actually shutting down half of your opponent's ability to play, all of your opponent's ability to play on other people's turns.
Right, right.
Whereas in Commander, you know, Jimmy might be taxed on my turn, but he'll just play it on Josh's turn or Ashton's turn or something like that.
I do like that you can choose which attacking creature gets this double strike, because it could be the angel and your five other soldiers are attacking, so it gets +5/+5 for all those attacking creatures, and double strike is going to hit for a ton, so that's nice there.
What about the anthem? I think that anthems in general need to be bigger in Commander. Like +1/+1 in limited is very good. Like this is a bomb in limited.
Right.
But in Commander, +1/+1, those little anthems, they're not very widely used.
Yeah. Like Cathar's Crusade, for instance, right, is going to get you a lot more +1/+1 counters. And it's going to cost you 5 mana instead of 4 total here. So there's a lot of different ways to get anthems. I don't think that's what you're playing this card for, the last ability for sure.
Well, and then, I mean, you mentioned Cathar's Crusade. Like, isn't that just better than the last ability on this? Like, that's good enough. That's powerful enough, you know, especially in a go wide deck where you described 5 soldiers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's better than moving through this entire class system. What about other enchantments that give you double strike? Like, you wrote down True Conviction.
True Conviction. Yeah, there's a lot of other stuff that does this out there. I think the best thing about the Paladin class, again, is if you see your deck able to really curve out nicely with it and you're able to invest the mana at the right times to get the effects when you need it. Because maybe you don't need a +1/+1 anthem on turn 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or even 6. Maybe you don't need this level 3 until turn 8 or 9 when you're going to win the game with that effect. So if that's the case, then I could see Paladin class being more mana efficient than dumping 5 mana on a turn for, say, and then that's all you can do that turn. So it could work a little bit better that way. I think, again, these are the types of cards that you have to play a lot to really see how they work out. But I think this would work better in theory than on the table. But I'd have to see exactly. You know, it's great with Audric, Master Tactician, though, because it allows you to choose how creatures block and which ones block so that you can definitely get that big one through with Double Strike.
Nice.
But it's really bad with Audric, Lunark Marshal, because the trigger that he has, which grants all those extra abilities Double Strike.
Everyone Double Strike?
It happens at the beginning of combat, not when you attack, and Paladin class has it when you attack. But that card's still really interesting, and the fact that we talked about it for so long means that it potentially could see a lot of play.
Yeah, I like the classes in general. I think that they that a lot of times people will fixate on one or two of the different ones. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, is that if you can move through all of them, you get all of the abilities. And so it's almost like you're drawing a card by leveling it up when the card is already deployed on the battlefield.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so if you want all three of the abilities, you are getting a card's worth of value every time you pay that upgraded cost.
Right. And it all sits on one card, and you don't necessarily have to go through all of them because you may not want level 3 or level 2 even.
Exactly.
Okay. All right,
next up, we have Teleportation Circle. It's 3 and a white for an enchantment at the beginning of your end step. Exile up to 1 target artifact or creature you control, then return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control.
Hallelujah. Conjurer's Closet. The new Casa. White needs this.
Conjurer's Closet is great. People play it all the time.
This is a staple.
Yeah, it's got to be a staple, right?
This is definitely a staple. Wow. That we now have mentioned, I think, 2 staple cards in white in AFR for Commander. That's fantastic. This, right, Conjurer's Closet is just one of the best cards in blank decks. You get to choose a creature every single turn on your turn to bounce, come back, and re-get that enter the battlefield ability. This one includes artifacts as well.
Ooh, I like that. You know, there are some artifacts out there that I like blinking. Like my newest fan is blinking Archaeomancer's Map.
Ah, very
getting more,
nice.
Getting more planes, nice. You know, for
great,
sure.
Great, great card. Yeah. If you're playing a Brago deck, an Osgear the Reconstructor deck, Brea has a bunch of artifacts that like being blinked. Alayla, Artful Provocateur also likes you casting artifacts and probably getting entered the battlefield effects from them. So this just looks like a fantastic card. Great.
It's great.
Great, great, great card. So glad. I mean, I think honestly, they probably could have made this like two white-white so that not every deck that can just play white is just going to jam it in there, but I'm not complaining.
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Thumbs up.
Big thumbs up. Teleportation Circle, awesome card. Wow. So white, let's give a quick overview. Outside of Flumph being the best name in the set so far, I thought Dancing Sword was really powerful.
Great in equipment decks, yeah. You know?
Loyal Warhound was just great to have more. I mean,
that's
that
a solid card all over the place. But even Flumph that you mentioned, like that, those Defender decks, I think it's really solid. Same thing with the Book of Exalted Deeds. That goes great in Life Gain decks or Angel decks.
Yeah.
So those are really like narrow. But overall, you've still got some powerhouses, you know? Guardians of Faith.
Yeah, Guardian of Faith and Teleportation Circle are both very powerful cards. Not to mention, they work really well together. You can flicker the Guardian of Faith and keep phasing stuff out.
You just phase out. You just are always phased out.
Yeah, always something that's phased out. Be like, I don't want you guys to touch this card.
That is hilarious. You're just phased out every single turn. Oh my gosh.
Fun stuff.
All right. So that's white, and it is definitely overperformed for us.
Thank goodness.
We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, but when we come back, we're going to talk about all of the great black cards. Let's see if they can measure up to these amazing white staples.
Welcome one, welcome all to the set review for Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. We are now moving on to the Death Priest of Mirkol, which is the first black card we'll talk about that might go into the 99 of your decks. This is a 2 black creature tiefling cleric. That's a 2/2. Skeletons, vampires, and zombies you control get +1/+1. At the beginning of your end step, if a creature died this turn, you may pay 1 mana. If you do, create a 1/1 black skeleton creature token. So that skeleton creature token is going to be a 2/2 because of the Death Priest. But this is great. This is actually a triple lord, and vampires and zombies are very popular. And the fact that this will probably pump out a skeleton every single turn if you're like in an aristocrats type shell, or even you just can sack your zombies or vampires or whatever it is, seems like actually a really solid card. And that 1/1 is a 2/2.
Yeah, sounds solid. Now, does it bother you that it's a tiefling cleric and not any of these other types that it's pumping?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I guess clerics...
Do you know what I mean? Because like sometimes lords overlap. So overlap, like this lord, yeah, pumps this lord and this lord pumps, you know what I mean?
Now, notably, it doesn't say other skeletons, vampires, and zombies. Typically, it would if this was... Turn it into a skeleton, yeah. This just seems like a really strong tribal card, though, for anyone that has any of those and looks and wants to be sacking creatures or getting rid of creatures and pumping out other ones for them to use as fodder. So I think the vampire and zombie decks have very often had that as a sub-theme, whether it's aristocrats or just... sack my zombie for this type of value. So this is great. You're going to always get another 1/1 black skeleton at the end of each end step, your end steps.
Which is more stuff to sacrifice.
More stuff to sacrifice. Stuff to
trigger. Because yeah, if you want to sacrifice things, you also want more bodies to sacrifice. So this kind of feeds itself.
Yeah. So it's a pretty good rate for getting a 2/2. I see this as like a pretty solid player in a lot of those types of decks. So I'm interested to see which one is going to make the most use of it.
Sounds great. Next up, we have the Book of Vile Darkness. It is black for a legendary artifact. At the beginning of your end step, if you lost 2 or more life this turn, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. You can tap and exile the Book of Vile Darkness and artifacts you control named Eye of Vecna and Hand of Vecna. Create Vecna, a legendary 8/8 black zombie god creature token with indestructible. It gains all triggered abilities of the exiled cards.
Okay, so let's talk about Eye and Hand of Vecna. Eye of Vecna, it enters the battlefield, you draw a card and lose 2 life. So that obviously synergizes with the Book of Vile Darkness. And then you can pay 2 mana in your upkeep to draw a card and lose 2 life. So you can keep that going, but 2 mana for a card is a bit expensive. And the Hand of Vecna is an equipment that you can, has an equip cost for 1 life for each card drawn in your hand. So that's another way to lose 2 life by equipping it to something. So the Eye of Vecna just becomes a massive, or sorry, Vecna becomes a huge thing with all of these abilities where it enters the battlefield, you draw a card, you can pay 2 life to draw, or pay 2 mana to draw a card and lose more life. Interesting. The Book of Vile Darkness by itself, though, because I don't think you're going to get all 3 of these things on the battlefield, I think we have to evaluate this as just the black artifact with that first ability.
Absolutely. Like, people are going to try, and, you know, as we talk about those other ones, we'll throw out there the idea that you could make the Super Vecna, you know, the new Cauldra. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But for the most part, if you are including this in your commander deck, you want each piece to function on its own. So black, if you lost 2 or more life, you make a zombie.
Okay. So that's not the worst thing in the world. Keep in mind that Necropotence is the same mana cost as this, and the power levels here are a little bit different.
Jimmy!
I'm sorry.
Don't compare this to Necropotence.
I mean, how could I not? Look at the mana cost. You know, maybe if you're in like that Crick deck, but I feel like you have better ways to maximize the life loss, because you're not drawing cards because of it. You're just making a 2-2 black zombie creature token if you lost life.
Yeah, I think that you need to want zombies, and you need to make 4 zombies or 5 zombies for this to be worth it. And that means that this is sticking around for 4 or 5 turns and that you've reliably lost life for value, you know, not just like randomly like, oops, I'll hurt myself, I'll bolt myself, but you know, lost life for other reasons every single turn. And that's difficult to do.
Yeah. Honestly, I just want to see someone have the book and the eye and the handout at the same time. I think that would be the ultimate flavor win. Otherwise, I think this card is actually a little bit underwhelming. So yeah. Not a huge fan of it.
Compare this to Endless Ranks of the Dead, that just like amasses zombies in like a huge area. So I think that if you are playing this, you're going to want to make sure that those other two pieces are in there and you're just hoping, you know what I mean? Or finding different ways, or just trying to assemble this amazing Voltron Vecna on the battlefield, which would be great.
Totally. All right, moving on, we have the Forsworn Paladin. It's 1 black mana for a 1/1 creature human knight with menace, or menace. You can pay 1 in the black and tap the paladin to pay 1 life, and then you create a treasure token. So 1 in the black, tap, pay 1 life, not bad. 2 in the black, activate ability, target creature gets +2/+0 until end of turn. And if mana from a treasure was spent to activate this ability, that creature also gains death touch until end of turn. So that second ability, not terribly relevant. This first one, though, it's 1 in a black and a life to create a treasure token. Does this count as ramp in black?
So it doesn't actually ramp you because you're paying 2 to get 1, but it can ramp you on your next turn.
Yeah, and that treasure token, maybe you really want it because there are a lot of creatures now that love this. The sort of the new commander, Reclusive Painter Kalane.
Yeah, what about Gilded Goose? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, Gilded Goose, after you use the first food, you have to pay 2 and tap it to create another food, and then it can then eat that food. That food. Is this have a similar feeling to Gilded Goose in black?
It does, but you do get to make a treasure every single turn, but it does cost you 2 mana to make 1. So it seems like one of those things where it's like, nice, if you have that extra 2 lying around, you better be making a treasure out of this thing. And, you know, making those treasures, increasing them over time, maybe you have Zorn or Academy Manufacturing or whatever, and
then like
you make
that.
A lot of those treasures out there. But I could see this being just general kind of good stuff. It's a menace creature, so it can swing in. It does have the ability to give a creature death touch and +2/+0.
I mean, if you have infinite mana, someone dies.
Yeah, for sure. So at the very least, you know, it does have utility. I do like the fact that you can make treasures with this, because if you just happen to have 2 mana left over that you can't use, then at someone's end step, you can use this, make a treasure, and just sort of accumulate that extra mana over time. And especially if there are commanders that want to use these treasures to cast more spells, like Kalane especially, it seems like it works well in those worlds.
I can see this being useful in other formats too, where a 3 mana menacing attacker that also gives death touch, which makes it really difficult to block.
Yeah, you really don't want to, because it'll be a 3/1 with menace death touch. It'll kill whatever blocks it.
Yeah, but again, that's better in 20 life single, you know, 2-player formats. I'm excited to see whether that treasure generation is actually good enough.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things too. You just have to play it a bunch and see how it works in your decks and whether or not you can really make use of that.
All right, next we have Gelatinous Cube. 2 black black for a 4/3 creature ooze. Jeez. It has Engulf. When Gelatinous Cube enters the battlefield, exile target non-ooze creature an opponent controls until Gelatinous Cube leaves the battlefield. Dissolve. X and black. Put target creature card with mana value X exiled with Gelatinous Cube into its owner's graveyard.
Okay, I'm down with the first part of this. It's similar to like Ravenous Chupacabra or Hostage Taker, but it exiles a creature until the cube's off the battlefield. I am not down for the second part, because you're putting an exiled creature into a graveyard. It seems like you want to do the opposite in Commander.
I mean, I think that I agree with you, but we have seen that when they copy this effect in white, like on Banisher Priest or Fiend Hunter, I feel like that creature that's underneath it is never totally gone.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like, you get rid of the creature, I feel like, oh my gosh, I gotta find some way around it. Like, so for Gelatinous Cube, I would get something out of there and I'd want to activate it to get it into your graveyard because I would be afraid someone would kill it and you'd get your creature back and get your ETB back.
True.
You know what I mean?
I'm just more afraid that putting it in the graveyard gives them that chance. And if they didn't have a removal spell, maybe they have a reanimate instead.
Well, then you have the choice, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, if you think like, oh, they're a graveyard deck, I'm going to leave it under Gelatinous Cube. Or you're like, oh, they're a deck that has removal spells. I want to make sure that Gelatinous Cube, you know, I get this creature out from mm-hmm. under Gelatinous Cube so that when it does die in the next board wipe, they don't get their creature back.
At the very least, you can hold up mana for this if you think that they're going to try and remove it. And then if they do go to remove the cube to get their stuff back, you can just pay it to dissolve the creature into the graveyard. So there is a little bit of extra play going on there.
It does have the biggest power of all the creatures that I mentioned.
Right. Yeah. 4-3.
Four powered 4/4 means that it gets a creature out of the way and attacks really well.
It would just be nice if it permanently exiled that creature.
That would be, I think that would make it very good because it would be better than Ravenous Chupacabra.
True.
And I think that it would actually be a staple.
I think at that point as well, it would be.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not, but that's okay. Black has plenty of good removal already. All right, next up we have the Planeswalker in black. It's Lolth, Spider Queen, 3BB for a 4 loyalty Planeswalker. Whenever a creature you control dies, put a loyalty counter on Lolth, Spider Queen. Wow. Whoa. Already off to a great start.
It's going to get so much loyalty. Okay.
All right. So this has three abilities. The first one is zero. It's you draw a card and you lose one life. Okay. Zero cost to play this and draw a card, lose a life. That's very good rate. You don't have to lose any loyalty, but you don't gain any as well. -3, create 2/2/1 black spider creature tokens with menace and reach. So this will go from 4 loyalty down to 1. You get 2 creatures
that
are 2/1s.
Defense right there.
Yeah, that is a real defense. And then the -8, you get an emblem with whenever an opponent is dealt combat damage by one or more creatures you control, if that player lost less than 8 life this turn, they lose life equal to the difference. We'll talk about that one in a sec. The wording is really interesting. First thing I note, whenever a creature you control dies, so this counts tokens.
It counts the spiders that it creates.
Yeah, so you can -3 to make 2/2/1s, and if you have a sac outlet or they die blocking, Lolth gets 2 more loyalty counters immediately.
So I can see that they planned that out, that basically they would get 2 more loyalty immediately, but then you couldn't just keep doing that over and over again.
Right.
You know what I mean? Then if you minus it again to protect it again, there's not enough loyalty.
Fortunately, Lolth is in Commander, which means that there's going to be a lot hanging around the table. So if you already have a sac outlet for any creatures that are on the board, if you're playing Aristocrats, whoo boy, you are going to town because, again, this cares about just creatures, which is an amazing line of text that doesn't say non-token creatures. It really opens up Lolth to being able to add a ton of loyalty on. And I think getting to that -8 is more realistic than people might realize.
I think that getting to the -8 is totally doable. It's just, I mean, let's look at the -8. I just don't know if it's as good as drawing a card or losing a life or making 2/2/1 spiders.
So it's weird wording because you actually kind of want to make them lose less life.
Like
with the
you kind of want to just get in with one unblockable one.
Yeah,
and then the trigger makes them lose 7.
You want to poke them for 1, and then they've lost less than 8 life, so it's 8-1 to take 7 additional damage.
But how easily can you just get that 1 damage through and have that trigger?
I don't know.
And also, it's not like it's a gigantic trigger in 40 life formats.
Right.
You know, you still have to get damage through.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to get damage through. You'd have to potentially want to do it to multiple players with like 1/1, maybe like Inkling tokens or something, but those are 2/1s, so.
You can't even double emblem and have it work.
The idea, though, is that they're always going to lose 8 life, right? So if you hit them for 7.
You still have to get the damage through combat damage.
So then maybe it doesn't even matter that you're poking them with small 1/1s. Maybe you could poke them with a 4/4 in the air and then they lose 4 extra damage. So what it is that as long as you're not doing more than 8 damage to them in combat, then they're going to always lose 8.
But then that's an emblem that essentially does 4 damage. You know, that is not a powerful emblem.
No, but
you know,
given that you might be able to emblem this the turn you play it, then maybe it's worth
it. Okay, yeah, you're right. Then that is, I'm just thinking that the 2/2/1s are, with menace and reach is quite good.
Yeah.
So I might actually draw more cards and get those spiders more often than I ultimate.
Yeah.
And maybe then a little bit later when I have this overwhelming board, I'm like, I guess I'll ultimate because this thing has like 20 loyalty on it.
Yeah. I wonder if it's 8 life because it's a spider. It has like 8 legs or 8 eyes or something. Yeah, there you go. Okay. So I think the play pattern for this is you want to draw a card or drop spiders. You don't want to be doing any of that other stuff, right? Like you don't really care as much for the Lolth minus eight emblem, unless you just have all of that mana or all of those creatures lying around to sacrifice and get Lolth to that level.
All right. So next up, we have Power Word Kill.
Kill.
One and a black for an instant. Destroy target, non-angel, non-demon, non-devil, non-dragon creature.
It's like Avada Kedavra in a way, right? Ooh, so yeah. This is one and a black for an instant, which kills pretty much everything. Except what it doesn't, right? Big angels, demons, devils, or dragons. I think angels and dragons and demons are going to be the more common ones. But yeah. This, you know, you wrote down that this kills 95 out of 100 of the top 100 creatures in Commander. Wow.
But obviously, you could be facing down a dragon tribal deck, an angel...
Or a Kalia deck, yeah.
Yeah, a Kalia deck. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And then this is your removal spell does nothing. I think it's a good comparison to like Victim of Night.
Mm-hmm.
Non-vampire, non-werewolf, you know. That's in 3,000 decks. I mean, you think about it. How does this compare to the two most commonly played black removal spells? Feed the Swarm in 19,000 decks and Deadly Rollick in 18,000 decks.
Wow. This compares... I think kind of poorly. The instant speed is nice, but at the same time, we also have like Tragic Slip, and that can pretty much get rid of anything without these extra little things in there. So black is the color of removal. They have lots of options. So I think Power Word Kill is going to be great in limited, maybe great in standard historic.
You just know your playgroup. Your playgroup doesn't have any of these things.
Yeah.
Like, this is a staple.
It's going to feel bad though when the biggest, scariest thing on the table can't get removed by a Power Word Kill. And very often those are dragons or angels or demons.
Yeah.
So I think that is slightly a bit of a downside here. But it you know, if you just need redundancy and more cheap instant speed removal spells, that's nice. But you also have Terror, right? Isn't that the same for just non-black creature?
Non-black, non-artifact.
Non-artifact, yeah. So that could also cover a lot of stuff too. So I think it depends on your playgroup, but it definitely is up for debate. Next up, we have Sphere of Annihilation. X and a black for an artifact. Sphere of Annihilation enters the battlefield with X void counters on it. At the beginning of your upkeep, exile Sphere of Annihilation. All creatures and planeswalkers with mana value less than or equal to the number of void counters on it, and all creatures and planeswalker cards in graveyards with mana value less than or equal to the number of void counters on it.
Ooh, this is an interesting removal spell.
Yeah, so it's a delayed exile, so you cast it probably on your turn if you don't have flash, and then you wait to your next upkeep. And then you exile this, and then all creatures and planeswalkers with mana value less than the number of void counters. So let's say five. From both the battlefield and the graveyard, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, exile and hitting the graveyard. But this is like the most telegraphed board wipe ever.
Right. But if stuff is already on the table, they can't do anything about it, really, unless they bounce it to their hand. So it's telegraphed.
Well, they kill the artifact.
Yeah, that would be the worst, for sure, that they're killing the artifact. What is nice, though, is that, you know, if you're playing this in the deck right, then you have a bunch of artifacts and enchantments or your instants and sorceries that don't care about the Sphere of Annihilation, or you set it to the point where your creature that needs to live is above the mana value of whatever X is.
Mm.
So I'm like, where does this see play? I could see this like maybe in a Sanctum of All type deck that plays all the shrines because they're all enchantments. Maybe a Kess Dissident Mage where you're spell slinging a bunch. Maybe you're playing it in Kodi, Vociferous Codex, because you're playing it before you play Kodi or whatever it is. You play it at like for like six and then it wipes the board and then you play Kodi and just dump out a bunch of sweet instants and sorceries. I don't know.
Being able to redeploy fast is very good, because one of the downsides of board wipes is that you wipe the board but you've used all your mana getting rid of everything.
Right.
And so every other person gets a chance to redeploy before you. This does give you the chance to redeploy, but... what I like more than all of those other upsides that we talked about is reliability in my board wipes. And this board wipe is slow.
Mm-hmm.
And
telegraphed.
Because, yeah, telegraphed, so that your opponents have more opportunities to interact with it, which means that it's unreliable. So I don't think I'm going to be playing it at all.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a great card unless you can flash it in right before your upkeep and just sort of get your opponents. Mm. At the same time, maybe you play it for X is equal to 2 and everyone's just okay with it and they let it go through because there's a bunch of problematic 2 drops or something.
Let's do it for 3 and take out those annoying 3 mana planeswalkers.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, cool. All right, next up we have the Skullport Merchant. 2 in the black for a dwarf citizen. That's a 1/4. When Skullport Merchant enters the battlefield, create a treasure token, and then you can play 1 in the black to sacrifice another creature or a treasure to draw a card. So this is one of those cards. It's an uncommon that I think you don't want to sleep on because it's got one power. So the Shire Shizo Caretaker deck likes this a lot.
Mm.
Bounces it back to the battlefield a bunch because it's got one power. You make more treasure tokens.
Treasure's just good, honestly.
Yeah, like, treasures are just good.
Yeah, like this is just creating extra treasure is so good because this can ramp you into bigger things in later turns.
Yeah,
you might be getting something a little bit underwhelming on turn three, but then on turn four, you're playing bigger things that can make bigger splashes. And it isn't even like this is useless. It has a draw a card on it.
Yeah, and you can sacrifice a creature or a treasure. I remember being really excited about Ruthless Knave, which said sac three treasures to draw a card. Oh, this is a much better rate, and you can sac creatures, including non-token creatures and token creatures. You can steal a creature and sac it for value and get a card out of it. So I like this a lot. You don't have to tap the Skullport Merchant to do it as well. This is, again, one of those cards, I think, just don't sleep on it. It's an uncommon that has a lot of upside, and it could definitely see play in the right decks down the line.
Awesome. All right, next up, we have a very unflavor equipment. It is Vorpal Sword. One black mana for this equipment. It has equip cost black, black. Equipped creature gets +2/+0 and has death touch. Hmm. It also has an activated ability. Five black, black, black.
Oof.
Until end of turn, Vorpal Sword gains whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, that player loses the game.
Ooh, it's like Phage the Untouchable.
Woo! All right. So, again, this has like the ultimate on it. You know what I mean? That's a lot of mana. But one black mana, two black to equip, +2/+0 in death touch.
Not bad by itself. That's fine, I think. It is black, black to equip, so you need to be playing this in a black heavy deck. But that's still a one mana equipment that gives a really relevant ability, which is death touch.
Yeah, if you want a sword in your deck, this could be a really good one. But the fun factor of just saying, I'll attack you, and you're like, how much mana do you have up there? And you're like,
enough.
Eight.
And you're in black, right? So you have your Cabal Coffers, your Crypt Gas, your Magus of the Coffers. You have the ability to get to eight mana for sure. And if it's a death touch creature, they're going to have to block it. So they're probably going to lose something.
Oh my God.
Or they're going to put into a really awkward spot where they have to remove something. You know, it's interesting. I think Vorpal Sword is, again, got tons of upside, super flavorful. Love the art. And the ability is just a lot of fun.
I think that people are gonna die from this. I'll attack you with Vorpal Sword. How much mana do you have? Oh, I don't have eight. No blocks. And it's like Dark Ritual. Cabal Ritual.
I got eight.
Eight.
Yeah. Whoops. Love it. Sorry, you lose the game. All right, next up we have the class in black. It is Warlock class. So one mana for an enchantment class. It comes in with the ability, at the beginning of your end step, if a creature died this turn, each opponent loses one life. That's relevant in Aristocrat's deck. Just by itself, I think this makes a case for Aristocrat's decks that might want to play it.
And if it's just a creature died, not even one of yours.
Yep.
So you have more control over your own creatures dying, but if you just have a deck that's very easily taking out other people's creatures, this could just add a little bit of extra damage.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you pay two mana, you're going to level this up to level two. And when this class becomes level two, look at the top three cards of your library, put one of them into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. So the graveyard part is really relevant in black decks as well. Two mana, so three mana to look at the top three and draw a card. But it also has this amazing ability stapled onto it. So two mana at any other turn in the future seems like an okay rate to pay for that.
This is Ransack the Lab, which is a spell that you should just be playing in black decks. I honestly think that it gives you really good selection and smoothly moves through your deck. So yes, so far, this is great. What about this ultimate ability?
Well, this ultimate ability is Wound Reflection. It's six in the black to get to level three. At the beginning of your end step, each opponent loses life equal to the life they lost this turn. Wow. So if you're in that Aristocrats deck, this is kind of a finisher in a lot of ways. Or even if you're in a combat-based deck, this is another huge finisher. Pair this up with Lolth, and all of a sudden they're losing 8+ × 2, right?
Yeah. This is an incredibly powerful effect when you get up there. It makes all of your things kind of have double strike a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
One thing to note, though, that it is at the beginning of your end step only. So it is something that you have to be doing that damage. Wound Reflection and other cards like that. Like, let's say if you attack, you know, Josh on your turn, Wound Reflection reflects all of that damage just for your opponents. This is only going to trigger on my turn. So it's not quite as powerful as Wound Reflection, but let's not like talk down its power level. It is great. And this is an uncommon.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You may never actually activate it for seven mana, but let's say you look at your board state, you look at the game, you go, the only way I'm going to win is by getting this to level three and doubling up the damage I'm doing because I have tons of life loss abilities with Aristocrat Drains or whatever it is. So there is a world where I think Warlock class, just for the first level one and level two, is definitely playable. Especially if that level two is something
level two
is great.
Don't you want to select and draw the right card?
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally want to do that. Love it. All right, next up we have Westgate Regent. It's 3BB for a 4/4 vampire with flying. It has ward of discard a card.
That's a real cost. Yeah, whenever a creature becomes a target of a spell or ability in opponent controls, they have to get it countered unless they discard a card. Woohoo! I'm never targeting this thing.
That's good protection. And whenever Westgate Regent deals combat damage to a player, put that many +1/+1 counters on it.
Okay, so the first time it hits someone as a 4/4, it's going to get 4+1/+1 counters. Then it's going to get 8, then 16, then 32. Probably not going to get that far, but that's a big uptick in power and toughness.
This is just a big, powerful beater of a vampire, and it does have this sort of long game potential that makes it relevant in Commander. If this just attacked for 4, you'd be like, it's fine, we'll deal with it eventually. But the fact that it doubles up every time means that it becomes more relevant in these multiplayer formats.
I would politic my way out of this and be like, look, you can hit me for free the first time.
Oh, that's good. Dude, listen to Jimmy.
Just hit me for free. I don't care.
Just get it out of the way.
As long as you don't hit me the second and third times. And then everyone else has to be hit for 8 and 16. And hopefully by the time he gets to 32, someone's going to have gotten rid of this thing.
I love as well that, like, to get rid of it, you're gonna make them discard an extra card.
Yeah.
So they're 2-for-1-ing themselves just to get rid of it when they have to and
it's
gotten big.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, vampire really decks are gonna love this.
Okay, well that's gonna wrap it up for black and white when it comes to commander cards that we like in the 99 from Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. DJ, what was your favorite card that we talked about today from white and black?
I think my favorite card is the Book of Exalted Deeds.
Ah, okay.
I really like the idea. Yeah, of building your own Platinum Angel.
Yeah, it's
but also
cool.
Like I have a Life Gain deck, I have an Angels deck, so just paying white and pumping out more Angels that synergize with my other Angels is just going to be really good. So personally, that's my go-to card right here.
Okay, I'm a big fan of Lolth the Spider Queen. I really want to play this in some decks and pump out a bunch of tokens or just get this really high and at the very least draw a card and lose a life every single turn that it's out. Seems pretty good to me. I like this card a lot, especially because again it doesn't say non-token creature. It's just any creature you control dying. So
I love how well it protects itself.
Yeah, you know? 100%.
You need that level of protection in Commander much more so than in 1v1, and I think that this actually has it.
Yeah, it protects itself in a bunch of different ways. Okay, what is your vote for the most powerful card in the set from these two colors specifically?
My pick?
Our pick?
It's our pick. Teleportation Circle.
Yep. It's 3W for a very relevant effect. You're going to bounce things and flicker them. And we all know just how important flickering is because there's so many
There's so many Enter the Battlefield effects. Like we've seen we've seen how good Ephemerate is in white, right? Mm-hmm. Like I feel like I've put it in way more decks than I need to. And we've seen the new Thassa be able to blink things in blue decks, and it's been quite good when I've seen it played, which means that Teleportation Circle is just going to be great. It's just going to be awesome. It's going to be perfect.
And it fits into Artifact Matters decks as well. Also a big fan of Loyal Warhound and Guardian of Faith.
Guardian of Faith, I think, is another one. Guardian of Faith might be better for white decks, but it's a little bit like a eat your vegetables kind of thing, whereas I want to blink stuff for value.
yeah, totally. So there's a lot of great white cards here. I'm really impressed. To the listeners, let us know what you think about the white and black cards that we've talked about today from AFR. Really exciting in general. I think there's a lot to talk about here. Also, let us know your thoughts on the class cards, Paladin class, Warlock class, all that stuff. I am interested to see if you think they're worth it, if you are a level 1, level 2 type of person, or if you're trying to pump that to level 3 every single time. And let us know if there's anything that we missed as well in the comments below. You can tweet at us or find us on Instagram and all of those good platforms. Finally, if you want to buy any of these cards, make sure you go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone because that's where you're going to be able to get them. That's where you're going to be able to get your Ingenious Smith as that's just being an awesome uncommon, your Death Priest of Miracle, or your Skullport Merchant.
Oh, your Skullport Merchant,
I love when uncommons are really awesome gets in sets because they're easy to attain, and by going to cardkingdom.com/commandzone, you can get those cards in your inbox/real mailbox very quickly and slot them into the decks that they're going to do the most work in. So please do
You know
that.
What I mean? Like just spend $5, you know, use the affiliate link, but then get a bunch of uncommons that you can start playing with these cards right now.
Yeah.
And you know what? We might have been excited about some mythics, but you know, we can wait. Let's get those uncommons in our decks immediately.
Totally. Especially because those commons do a lot of work. I think Skullport Merchant, I'm telling you, I have a good feeling about this card. Okay. And of course, Ultra Pro as well as one of our sponsors. They make the awesome playmats. You can see that we have the Gelatinous Cube here on DJ's. I believe I have an adult gold dragon on this one as well. Just a beautiful looking dragon.
I mean, your dragon is very beautiful it categorically, is. But come on, you're going to have the ooze underneath your cards, aren't you?
I'm not going to get put in the ooze, so you can just take that away this from me. Cube. My dragon's going to fly away from your ooze. And put me in the graveyard. Make sure you check out Ultra Pro, especially if you're at your local game store and you're trying to rejuvenate the local economy, because we're all coming back from this pandemic and I can't wait to play some cards with all of you in person very, very soon. All right, no end step on these review episodes, so we're just going to go straight to the clean up step and give a big thanks to our amazing team here at the Command Zone. Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Alfred the Sokka, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Arthur Meadowcroft, Sam Waldo, Gaurav Galati, and special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the living card animations that will live behind us occasionally on set and always start our show on our channel on YouTube. You can find them on Twitter at Living Cards MTG. Okay, we have one more set, part of the set to review for In the 99 coming up, where we're talking about the colorless cards and the multicolored cards.
And some and green
the
lands, cards.
And some green cards as well.
Yeah.
Lots left, lots of interesting things to talk about, as well as a bunch more classes. So make sure you don't miss it. Subscribe to the channel. Do all that good stuff. And we'll see you next time.
See you soon. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
For your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.